First, be genuine. Don't do something for the money. Chase the dream, not the paper. Who was that? Biggie Smalls, I think. He says, chase the dream, not the paper. And I fully believe in that. So be genuine. Do something that's important to you from the perspective of, if you don't get this done, you don't feel like your life's complete. And I know that's a really tall order, but the fact is, you've got to be genuine.
Hey everybody, how's it going? My name is Gray Jabesi and this is another episode of the Gray Air Podcast. So those who are Twitter birds, you can follow me there at GrayBTC. GrayBTC, that's my Instagram. Oh yeah, Instagram and Twitter handle, both. So yeah, you can follow me there, we can follow each other. And today we have an exciting guest by the name of Steve Distante. And Steve has been here before. He has been here on episode 27 and episode 28. On episode 27, we talked about driving Teslas, and we basically talked about electric cars, electric vehicles, because he is known as Tesla's number one fan. You can look it up on the internet, you'll definitely find him. And 28, we discussed entrepreneurship. So on episode 28, it's titled Lessons on Entrepreneurship, and I'll throw the link in the description if you want to check it out. I do recommend that actually you listen to episode 28. It's actually one of my personal favorite episodes since I started this podcast. So you might want to ask, who is Steve? Well, Steve Distante is the CEO. As he likes to say, the CEO is not for chief executive officer, it's for chief entrepreneurial officer. So he's the CEO of Vanderbilt Financial Group, an independent broker dealer and registered investment advisory that manages over $1 billion in assets. Steve prides himself on being a social entrepreneur with a focus on impact investing, investments that have either a social and or environmental impact. Vanderbilt's headquarters are located in Woodbury, New York. Recently became Long Island's first LEED Platinum office building, creating a tangible example of Vanderbilt's commitment to sustainability. When Steve began his impact journey, he, like many others, shifted through the commonly confused topics of socially responsible investing, philanthropy, and impact investing. He quickly realized that learning about impact investing was not easy or accessible as it should be. In 2016, Steve launched Impact U to provide a unified and easily navigational platform where impact experts can collaborate, share experiences, and teach impactful way of investing. So that's it, really. Steve, he's a hell of a guy, and I'm sure you guys will learn a lot from him. And I do recommend, by the way, that you go all the way back and you listen to episode 27 and 28. 28 being my favorite. And you get to hear his story, and he started his entrepreneurial journey when he was really, really young. So, you know, he is one of those that you could say entrepreneurs are not made, they're born. So I hope you enjoy my conversation with Steve, and remember to subscribe to the Gray Air Podcast on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, pretty much all the streaming platforms, and have a fantastic day, evening, morning, whatever time it is that you're listening to this. I'll see you on the next episode. Thank you.
So thank you for reaching out. I really appreciate that.
No problem. Thank you for making the time.
I love my life. I'm doing what's important. That's the cool part.
So I wonder what would be your advice on the average person when they're trying to buy a vehicle, whether it's just a sports car for fun or as an asset that they, you know, it's going to add value to their business.
You'd have to be in, I guess, the renewable energy business or so in order to make that work. I can only say from my experience has been challenging if you're buying brand new, in that they drop off in value pretty quickly. From that new cost, it's the research and development aspect. And me as an entrepreneur, you know, I believe in giving back and buying a Tesla when it was $142,000, I think was my first one, was not a wise investment. And I kind of got walloped a little bit on that one. But it was research and development, right? It was a new vehicle, and you saw it doing its thing. for a person who's just getting into the EV world.
No, okay, let's just keep it generic as buying a vehicle, not just an EV.
Oh, it's buying a vehicle. So I like buying EVs used. I like buying EVs as pre-owned. Typically, they don't have a lot of miles on them. You know, if this, speaking for Tesla in particular, I believe the life on the brakes is about 100,000 miles. I have had no degradation in the battery of my new vehicle, which is a pre-owned 2014. And my 2010 Roadster, maybe 10% degradation. And these are, and the battery is made of a whole bunch of laptop batteries. So it's not like it's one of these sophisticated batteries like they have today. So buying pre-owned, I think, is a great bet. But in the U.S., we have this thing, a website, which is by far one of my funnest websites to go on. It's called swapalease.com, S-W-A-P-A-lease, right? L-E-A-S-E. And you can go on there and select your type of vehicle, get notifications and so on, but take over somebody else's lease because they either didn't realize that they don't like electric vehicles or they couldn't manage it or whatever it is. It's not specifically for electric vehicles. But on there, there's a number of EVs and you can just take over somebody's lease. Sometimes people have put $10,000, $20,000 down on a lease. They've got a payment that's reasonable and you can take it over for 6, 12, 24, 36, whatever number of months happen to be remaining in that particular lease. And I think that's a great strategy for somebody who wants to get into an EV. But overall, as a strategy for myself, it's either I'm going to be dumping money in for research and development like the Roadster, you know, the new Roadster, or basically take a ton of depreciation, which everybody does on vehicles. There's not many vehicles that you can buy and actually make money. But EVs as a used vehicle, my gosh, they drop off like a rock. And buying them pre-owned is a huge opportunity for people because they don't, you know, the companies that are buying them back, say it's the manufacturer, are paying pennies on the dollar. So I think there's a great opportunity there.
Fantastic. So then moving on to your current projects, the impact investing side of things is still going on. So why did you feel a need to launch Impact U Film? And what was the aim?
ImpactU.film, which anybody that wants to see the documentary, the current version, I call it 1.0, is a film I put together to be shown at the UN on September 11th. And it was a film about entrepreneurs making a difference in the world. And the film was shown to $1 trillion in investable assets in the room for this very special event on impact investing at the UN in 2018, so September 11th, 2018, at the UN in New York City. And it was a project I put together just as a gift for the impact investing community. And now that project's moving on to include me and my EVs, my electric vehicles. It's going to have another story of a woman who is restoring the Bronx, of all places, the South Bronx, so a woman by the name of Majora Carter, and a little bit more into the stories. But the point of the story was to show people how business could change the world, how business for good. And it's part of my role as the Entrepreneurs Organization, as the Entrepreneurs Organization ambassador for the UN, for entrepreneurship. I was at the UN yesterday. We're planning an event in June, and it's all about talking about how we as entrepreneurs can change the world with our businesses. And, you know, so the film is the first step of many films to come. I actually will be interviewing Henrik Fisker in a couple of weeks, in April, actually, for a film I'm going to be doing on electric vehicles. And so it's part of who I am. So as I mentioned, my why is to inspire entrepreneurs to be impactful in their lives and in the world. And we can, as business owners, do that. And this film is just celebrating people who are doing that. I mean, one part of the film that I love was, you know, the True Colors group, True Colors Brewing, who takes basically active gang members. And they require the founder, George Taylor, requires the active gang members to stay in their gangs and influence one another inside the gang, but then at True Colors, working with rival gang members. So you've got the Crips, the Bloods, and the Gangsta Disciples working under one roof in peace and harmony for entrepreneurship, and they've reduced crime and violence in Wilmington, North Carolina by 95%. 95%. And that's just one example of how the world is getting changed with entrepreneurship. And so these films that come out are all about how we're able to change. And it starts with Occupy Wall Street. Did they make a difference? And I contend they did. You know, their view of the one percenters is not exactly accurate. And the one percenters for me include about 60-70% entrepreneurs. I kind of fit that classification. And we're not the caviar eating, private jet flying, stepping on the backs of others people. We have most of our money locked up inside our businesses, and we're looking to make a difference. So the film goes through Occupy Wall Street, talks a little bit about that, talks about these companies, a couple of company examples, and then ultimately with the UN, the Sustainable Development Goals, which are 17 areas that the world could use some real help in order to be able to, you know, solve or at least improve problems around the world. And so the film and entrepreneurship is all about that, being able to do good things with our businesses, which is what impact investing is all about and what I'm all about. That's my why.
I was saying that I liked the part where they were making use of plastic in Haiti. That was great as well.
That's a great story. That's the plastic bank, David Katz. He created what he calls social plastic, where he actually, you know, these people are getting paid six times what they'd normally get paid for a position, for a job in Haiti. And they're cleaning up the plastic is so horrible over there. The damage that it's doing to our oceans, because the majority of it is ocean bound. So they pelletize it, and the people get paid in either money, in cryptocurrency, in diapers, in medicine, or whatever it is that they happen to need, food. And they have this conversion through the plastic bank that does that for them and pays them very handsomely. And then also, you know, is able to, you know, clean up our earth. And again, most of these plastics are ocean bound. And there are companies, you know, that have committed to use only social plastic to make their products. There's a cosmetics company and a soap company here called Lush. And Lush uses just that plastic in order to make their products. And it's just their way of, you know, doing good in the world and improving our earth by buying these products.
And so when it comes to impact investing, a lot of people, I think, still confuse it with charity. Can you just clarify what impact investing really means? Because I was chatting to a VC, to a venture capitalist the other day, who is more interested in the impact investing side of things. So I wonder how would you advise someone to create a pitch, say if they're trying to pitch something to you as an impact investing project? What do you look at that, you know, that to make sure that the cause is good, but at the same time the business makes sense also?
Yeah, so impact investing had a couple iterations of its name, so that we're really clear on what we're talking about. In today's world, it's called ESG, which is environmental, social, and governance. And it's also called SRI, which is sustainably responsible investing or socially responsible investing. As you can see, it gets kind of confusing. And it's also known as impact investing, but it has its roots in a thing called triple bottom line. And that really focuses on profit, planet, and people. How are you impacting the world? And those three things become the nucleus or the center of a business that is focused on doing good in the world. And so as a person is putting together their project, and this works for both sides. So, Gray, let me be clear on this. Part of my mission is to open the eyes of entrepreneurs in the world that are in their wonderful seat of profitability and value in their company. And rather than sell that sucker to, you know, the highest bidder, consider doing an ESOP, an employee stock ownership plan, or consider doing something where you're able to put your purpose and passion into the business. So we've got these people who are in business already, but as your question was about people who are putting together their pitch and they're putting together their their business plans in order to be able to raise capital or so. First, be genuine. Don't do something for the money. Chase the dream, not the paper. Who was that? Biggie Smalls, I think. He says, chase the dream, not the paper. And I fully believe in that. So be genuine. Do something that's important to you from the perspective of, if you don't get this done, you don't feel like your life's complete. And I know that's a really tall order, but the fact is, you've got to be genuine. The next thing is, being able to do something that's very much in line with what it is that your purpose or passion is all about. So just clearly pave this path. And the next thing is to be an expert in it as best you can. A lot of times things are just evolving so quickly. You can't be an expert in all things, but know as much as you can about it. And ultimately be able to bring something to the table that solves a problem, but also provides profitability. So you had mentioned that people get confused with philanthropy and impact investing, and they don't understand that difference between the two. It is different. It's absolutely different. And impact investing is very much rooted in people who have maybe made lots of wealth. A good friend of mine, Chintan Panchal, who's an impact attorney, sits there and gives advice and deals to billionaires who have made lots of money, but they're still looking to do good in the world. So there we go. They want to still make money. And these deals that he puts together are supposed to yield 14% to 18%, but then also have some sort of social good involved with it. And his job is to be able to report back on both those things. And that's the idea. So you need to be able to provide a profitable, sustainable model, and you need to be able to be doing good at the same time. So that's the trick, because this isn't philanthropy. This is doing good, but putting in the DNA of your company so that you can be able to sustain yourself. And the mistake a lot of people do is they'll take their passion, dive headfirst, all in, with no idea how they're going to make money, and they're just going to raise capital. Well, that's kind of problematic if you don't happen to be very good at raising capital, or the world doesn't see your opportunity the way you see it. And so some of the best business models that I've seen have evolved out of existing businesses that are sustainable, profitable, and those businesses are able to morph themselves, add this additional value with this new line of product or with this new line of business or however that works. That's my story. My story is we have billions of dollars in the space and we weren't all impact investing. We still aren't to this day, right? It's a matter of being able to have the intention and know that at some point people are going to demand this. And people are going to want it, but to be prepared for that. So you'll have lots of experience, or tuition, I call it, right, in that area when people start to buy into what it is that you, in fact, are doing. So it's less of a startup opportunity, and it's more of an opportunity inside an existing business. But for those startups, you'd better be pretty sure that this is the reason you were put on earth and you're passionate about it, because your enthusiasm, your energy, your passion, when you're talking to people, when you're talking to investors, they need to know come hell or high water that you are in this because you are committed and it's not just another investment for you. This is really a big deal for you because you believe very much so about, you know, reducing human trafficking, let's say, or you really want to, you know, clean the world of its plastics or reduce violence. if those things are important to you, and then you can add to that sentence, and I have a profitable model that I've created, and this is how I'm going to do it, boy, that's where the magic happens. So creating the pitch is about going deep inside, really asking yourself, what am I passionate about? And passion leads to purpose. I talk about a thing called the BHAG, right? The Big Hairy Audacious Goal by Jim Collins, and how he got it wrong. The BHAG, that Big Hairy Audacious Goal, is a very disappointing place when you actually get to that goal. And I've repurposed it to BHAP, which is a Big Hairy Audacious Purpose. How can you live your purpose? And most people kind of get a little confused when you talk about purpose because most of us don't know it. But if you think of it in terms of passion as your crumb trail, as your identifiers, as your clues to your purpose, it will lead you to success. So very simply, what's your purpose? Find it through your passion. And if your passion is in alignment with your pitch and your business idea, you'll do really well because you'll be able to present it well. But now, will the world buy in? Do they actually see alignment? Is it sustainable? And the more sustainable, the better. All too often, people go way too early to pitch $5, $10, $20 million deals when they just need to create some profitability, they need to create some revenue, they need that food to feed their business. So be well thought out, be passionate, and have something that's sustainable. And that's where you're going to have your home run.
You answered a lot of questions that I wanted to ask anyway with that answer that you gave. So I'm just going to move next to the next question here that asked by some of the listeners. What are your thoughts on hedging or protecting yourself? There's a lot of talk right now in terms of that, you know, the economy might crash again, or we towards the end of the cycle, that now we might go into a recession or anything like that. Usually, since you've been through this before, what would you recommend for someone who is trying to build themselves up, that they do during these times?
So we're talking about from an investing perspective, from an entrepreneurial perspective. How are we talking about this?
I would say let's focus on both. So one at a time.
So in the investment world, it's been shown and proven that impact investing has got greater stickiness, and meaning the investors that go in these spaces to invest typically are investing because this means something to them. It's not just a return. And therefore, the dramatic drops that many people experience in areas that are not impactful can be much more drastic. So investing in a way that's congruent with your values is a way of being able to withstand a lot of the tumultuous markets that can happen during a recession. So it just lends itself to being more credible. I do use a process for my own investing. This is my personal, this isn't a recommendation, but I do use for myself a process called Dorsey Wright and Associates. Dorsey Wright actually looks at, are there more buyers or sellers for a particular sector or equity, or, you know, they can get very specific. But basically, if you have more buyers than sellers, the price goes up. And if you have more sellers than buyers, the price goes down. They were very early predictors. I thank God I was involved with them at that time. Very early predictors of the recession in 2008. In August, they were over 90% in cash for most of their portfolios. And so it was a great early indicator for me that something was going awry. We felt it. We didn't know what was going on, but we felt it and we saw it starting to happen. Now, I've looked at the Dorsey Wright portfolios recently, which is primarily made up of ETFs, electronically traded funds, and they are not heavily in cash. So what that means is that, and this is not, this is very it's not opinionated. It's not anybody's judgment. It's really automated the way this is done. Very artificial intelligence, but early phase. And there's not a lot of cash in there. When there's not a lot of cash, what that means to me is we're not that close to a recession. Truthfully, recession could happen any day. And during those times, being able to stick with what you love is going to be a heck of a lot easier from a roller coaster ride than not being in it just for, you know, the merits of making a return. So being able to have that passion about the company. And I often tell people, invest in things that you love. Invest in companies that you're really interested in. And if it happens to be Tesla, and that's not a recommendation, but if it happens to be Tesla, guess what? You're going to become very interested in it. And I like to tell people, especially young people who are looking to get into the market, buy the things you love and then you'll learn about them. It's also a great company out there. It's not a company, it's a supporting organization called the Options Industry Exchange, the OIC. I think it's the OIC.org, Options Industry Council, that's what it is. And they teach regular people who are not investment professionals how to buy options, short-term, long-term options, in order to be able to take advantage of market downturns and so on. And options are very tricky. They're very risky if you don't know what you're doing. But quite honestly, that's what I've seen people do during recessions very well. They allow you to create this mock account where you could actually just stick no money in it, but stick symbols of ETFs, of equities and so on, and start to play with some of the options that are available for those positions. If you have a portfolio, go over to Options Industry Council, OIC, and look at their accounts where you can set them up. And again, this is they do not do this business. They're the ones who actually support options in the industry, and they make a little bit of a commission or so, or charge. They charge the industry every time an option is bought or sold. And it's a really interesting way to be able to fend off a lot of the losses that people could have. But again, it requires you to get educated in it. But I've seen regular people do really well inside of options in order to be able to take advantage of their positions. And there's a bunch of strategies that are out there. Selling covered calls is a way, if you own a position, to be able to sell at a premium an option. And if the stock goes over a certain price, a person can call you out, but most of the time those things expire worthless and you just keep the premium for it. So there's some strategies out there. I'm glad you asked me. There's some strategies out there, but from an impact investor perspective, buy what you love, you know, do what you, you know, use your money as a way to be able to change the world in a very positive way and do it with passion, but you can't expect a return. You should expect a return. Now, you're going to have ups and downs, but if you stick in there and you pay attention to what the company is doing, you'll have a better understanding. You'll be more connected to those products or services that you may use.
All right, Steve. So at what point did you decide to become an impact investor? At what point and what triggered you to do that? Was it that you were at the most comfortable position in your life?
No, not exactly. I was unaware of impact investing, less than a decade ago. And I didn't know it existed, because the truth of the matter was it was only available to accredited investors and only these mega wealthy people knew it was even available. And when I was searching for purpose in my business and in my life, living what I call a congruent life, being able to have investments that reflected my values and passions in my life, led me down the path of discovery for impact investing. So, you know, my love for electric cars, you know, I've got 295 solar panels on my roof that provide me with 98% of the electric that for my company's building. All of those things were really important to me. We have a not-for-profit, which, it's known as the Heroes Against Heroin group, which educates people, funds longer stay inside rehab. These are all things that were important to me. And now I looked at, okay, the investment world, who has a profitable model that can actually serve this in order to be congruent with my passions? So one of my most recent investments was in a Broadway play, and it's a play that is about gender equality. I don't want to say much more than that, but my family is in basically the performing arts. My daughter is a set designer and gets treated very well by the industry. And I was talking to my wife, and she says, I'd love to be able to invest in something like that. And it was a perfect investment for us because we went, we saw the show. It was probably the best show we've seen ever, and it had nothing to do with the fact that we'd invested in it. And it just felt good to be part of this thing that was bigger than us. Looking at different investments, I clearly want to know what's the impact that they're going to have in the world. And we do actually have a Dorsey Wright portfolio for impact investing that we, you know, that we've created. So that's, you know, Dorsey Wright does offer that, well, especially through our company. So
awesome. And lastly, what are your thoughts on cryptocurrencies?
Yeah, so all my friends were very high on crypto investing and in the high, and so, you know, during the high, and now kind of put their heads into the sand a little bit. And I think it's a very important component in order to be able to create a viable financial system for places that don't have that available to them, especially in, you know, third world countries, or as, you know, the UN refers to them, less developed, or LDCs, especially in Africa, right? You're in South Africa. There's less developed countries there that don't have a currency system in order to be able to have an exchange of goods and so on. And as the 5G network starts to light up in the world, which is, you know, this network, that's going to be at least 10 times faster than what we currently experience, everybody's going to have access to the internet. These devices are going to be free. The satellites are going up now. I know of a program that's being done right now in Mexico, and we're hopeful that something happens in Africa soon. But cryptocurrency will be very key in that area. Trading it, what was going on at the time was everybody's just trading cryptocurrency in order to make a buck. But the concept of being able to have a coin, of being able to use a currency of sorts in order for people to level the playing fields, to cut out the middleman, is very true. And it's, you know, still in process and still evolving, and there will be some winners, right? But people are still involved with that in order to be able to do greater good. It's lost its hype because of the volatility of what was going on. But I still do believe, as what it was set out to do, not as something just to be trading currencies, but something that's going to be able to allow people who are unable to have financial resources at their fingertips, it will create that. And 5G, I think, will be a big part of that, because people have access to the internet like they never have.
Awesome. Steve, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate for making the time and having this conversation with me.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for what you're doing, because, you know, you give me the ability to be able to talk about some of the projects we're working on, but also what's, you know, how to have people change the way they think and do things that are going to be good for the world. And for that, I'm very grateful for you, Gray. Thank you so much.
And when will you consider doing some projects in Africa?
Guess what? We're talking about that now. Talking with the UN, we're going to be doing an entrepreneurship day at the UN in June. And as part of that, UNCTAD, the UN Trade and Development, is going to be talking about their report on how we can, as entrepreneurs, mentor and invest in projects with on-the-ground entrepreneurs in Africa, in some of the less developed countries in Africa, in order for them to get first technology and as well as energy to those areas. So I would say by next year I'll be doing something in Africa, because I do want to mentor entrepreneurs and be able to help them scale and grow their businesses if we can find some, you know, some opportunities over there. So I'd probably say within the next year or so.
I would like to be part of that program, if possible.
There you go. I'll keep you posted.
Awesome. Anyway, have a great day further. We'll keep in touch.
You too, and continue to be impactful. Thank you, Gray.
Thanks, bye.
Hello once again, and that was the end of our conversation. And just before you go, just want to communicate a few things with you quickly. If you have enjoyed any of the podcasts or this specific podcast episode, I would appreciate it if you share it with your friends and family through your social media, Twitter, Facebook, etc., etc., as well as write me a 5-star review on iTunes or Apple Podcast app. That would be fantastic. It helps me flourish and sustain this podcast as well. We also on other platforms like SoundCloud, Stitcher Radio, and all other major podcast platforms. So whichever way you're listening to it, I would appreciate it if you leave me a review. You can also subscribe to the Grey Podcast through my website, greyjabesi.com, greyjabesi.com. There you also find some of the blogs that I'm writing sometimes, and you get notified as soon as the new episode has been published. Until next time, enjoy and be productive. Thank you.